Welcome to the Alberta Wildlife Stories Podcast. I'd like to give a big shout out to our supporters Grizz Targets, Slayer Calls, C&D Archery, and Precision Edge Taxidermy. To find more info on these great people, be sure to check out the links in the description, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks for listening.
My name is Matt Vincent. I'm New Zealand-based and passionate about mountain and backcountry hunting. This has led to me founding MTN Gear, where we design and manufacture high-quality, lightweight, and highly functional products such as bipods, ice axes, and more. To find out more information, visit us at www.mtngear.nz or .us. We can also be found on the usual social media channels under the same name.
Join us on June 29th to July 1st for the first annual Alberta Wildlife Stories 3D shoot hosted at the Sherwood Park Archery Club in Central Alberta. The 3-day shoot will consist of 4 rounds, door prizes, vendors, a charity shoot-off, and much more, with all proceeds going to support the Sherwood Park Archery Club. To register, visit sherwoodparkarchery.com, and we hope to see you there. In case you missed it, we just announced the AlbertaWildlifeStories.com website, along with the first issue of the Alberta Wildlife Stories e-magazine and audio magazine that features articles narrated by the authors themselves. We're so stoked to bring this project to you guys. Head over to the website, check it all out. There's more content there with blogs, news posts, and everything there. We can't wait to bring you the next issue already. Joining me today is co-host Luke Squires and our guest, the one and only Ed Tetley. Ed is a family man with a laundry list of exceptional stories from his many years in the outdoors, alongside many family and friends. I'm stoked to hear about his upbringing and what led to his love for the Alberta wilderness. Aside from hunting, Ed was also an Olympic freestyle skier during the Calgary Winter Olympics, and he also welds some incredible fireplaces out of recycled materials that are true works of art. Without further ado, Ed, thank you tons for taking the time to come on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you guys so much for giving me the opportunity to share some stories with you. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't be more stoked to hear about everything that got you to where you are today.
It's a great story. It's many stories. And man, I really don't know how far back you want me to go.
Oh, we're going to go all the way back. I know you and your family have been huge supporters of all the Alberta Wildlife Story stuff, and Luke and myself and everything that we're doing. And we can't thank you guys enough for all the support. And it's just so awesome to have you on and talk to you tonight about everything.
You know, it's not just Alberta too. I got family all the way out in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, and they're so excited too. So it's not just Alberta, man. You're going countrywide already.
We can love be it. More stoked. Yeah. So, when you're saying how far back do you want to go, I know we briefly were talking when we first met there the other day, and we started touching on the size of family that you have and what it was like growing up with all the siblings and everything. So going way back, how many siblings did you have? And you said there's almost like 3 different families, right?
There is. So my mom and dad are both gone simply because of their age. They actually lived quite long and great lives, and they were married for, over 60 years. I know that for sure. But I have 5 brothers and 2 sisters. And dad had a huge passion for the outdoors. Mom was a rock hound. She loved the rock and gems and polishing her own stones and things like that. And so we were introduced to the wilderness and getting out camping very young, very, very young, you know. back then too, it was a lot of tenting and being wet, you know, the raining days and things like that. My mom and dad had three different families in a way. My oldest brothers are in their late 70s. Then I've got my two sisters and another brother who are in their 60s. And my younger brother and myself, Jim, were in our 50s.
Wow.
And,
Or just go on. I was going to ask if you get, so were you guys all born and raised in Alberta then at the time?
Absolutely. Yeah. All of us were born and raised in Red Deer.
Wow.
We all went to the same high school and the same elementary and the same junior high schools.
So. That's crazy.
Yeah. Red Deer wasn't too big back then. The 34,000 is a number that I remember when I was a little kid. So Red Deer wasn't that big a community. And we all went to the same schools and whatnot. It was a great upbringing. It truly was. It really, really was. And dad had a, so dad was a many different jobs over the years. He worked at McDonald's, Consolidated, or Safeways at the time, and was a produce manager for years and years. And as the family got larger and larger, he realized that he needed to make more money just to support the family and live the lifestyle that he wanted. So he became a traveling sign salesman. That way he could work his own hours, work as hard as he wanted. And the harder you work, he used to say, the harder you work, the luckier you get. And for me and my younger brother, when we were kids, he would phone us. By then he was a traveling sign salesman. He would phone us and he'd been gone for 2 or 3 weeks and say, look, guys, if you pack the motorhome and get it ready, when I come home, let's go. We're gone. We'll go out camping. We'll get out in the woods. And mom would, of course, pack the food and get everything ready. And the gear was always put away downstairs in the same spot, the same way. So Jim and I would grab the gear and load it up. And dad would come home, have a quick shower, change from a shirt and tie and whatnot and a suit into blue jeans and boots. And away we went.
Wow. That's too cool. And so you did mention, you know, as you got older and he started to introduce you into hunting and stuff like that, it almost didn't happen.
It did. So my next older brother is 10 years older than me. Wow. So there was a 10-year gap there, unfortunately. He wasn't interested in hunting as much as dad was and whatnot. And dad never pressured us. Max was an incredible athlete. So he went a different direction instead of hunting. And dad was almost at the point of actually selling all the firearms that he owned. And my mom said, well, hang on, wait a second. You got Ed and Jim. You got to give them at least the opportunity. And if they don't like it, then go ahead. So you're going back to the early 80s. And back then, you had to be 14 years old to go hunting. So when I was 13 years old, 1983, dad took us hunting. And I shot a grouse. I shot my first grouse with a 410 shotgun. And, you know, that was pretty amazing. I mean, he showed us how to step on the wings and clean it. You know, we were out in the woods playing with knives, doing hunting. And hunting was so ingrained in our family. My father, it was a way of sustaining life for us because he got back from the Second World War. He was in the Second World War, got back from the Second World War and immediately started hunting with my grandfather. And the stories as a little boy growing up, well, now I'm getting to do this. And, I'd been waiting for this for 13 years and now it's starting to happen. The next year, dad said, okay, we're going to go hunting. I'm now 14 years old. Got very lucky. I jumped. My dad, of course, had an Aries K-Car station wagon. And we took off. We were west of the Forestry Trunk Road. We'd been out there all day. as a 14-year-old with your first learner's license, by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're no longer really looking. You're just sort of driving. And I was cruising along the forestry trunk road with my dad in the passenger seat, and we were probably doing about 35 kilometers an hour. And my younger brother in the back seat yelled out, "Moose!" And I slammed on the brakes, skidded to a stop. I jumped out of the car and ran back. And sure enough, there was a bull moose there. And I had an open-sighted 303 British. My dad had his big game rifle, a 308 Norma Magnum, and it had a scope on it. And I said to Dad, I can't tell. Does it have horns? And he goes, it has horns. Well, I was a new hunter, and you know, accuracy wasn't really used that day. I hit it in the butt, I hit it in the gut, I hit it in the chest. But the moose finally went down, and that was it. Opening day, my first time ever hunting in my entire life, and here I am sitting there with a bull moose, you know. And that's it. I was hooked.
Do you still have that 303 British?
I don't. The 303 British was a borrowed British, but believe it or not, I still have the antlers from that bull. They were probably about, I don't know, maybe 12 inches long. And believe it or not, I use them as my rattling antlers.
No way.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because, Luke, you're going to bring your grandfather's 303 British, right, to spring bear camp this year?
Yeah, that's right. My grandfather used a 303 British back in Newfoundland to hunt moose with Ed. And I got inherited it to me when he passed. I haven't used it to kill anything yet, so I'm going to take it for my first black bear.
That is, you know, that's a cherished firearm there. Like, I'm so envious. Good for you, man. Fantastic.
But I got to add, Ed, you said open sights. Yeah. I was bugging Luke. I was like, dude, just go iron sights, man.
Well, yeah, like, you know, you got to remember that it was a great big long rifle, and I was just a little tiny skinny dude, man. The rifle was as long as me, and it was just a miracle that I was able to hold it up level, you know.
Sounds like me right now.
I got the pictures, and honestly, one of these days, guys, I'll bring you the photo albums. I got photos that go back right to the 1950s, and man, I'd love to show them to you.
Yeah,
love to see them.
Yeah. So going from there, that was like how you cut your teeth on hunting on a big bull moose. You know, you also mentioned that you had this passion for freestyle skiing.
Yeah. So
like, where did that come from? At what point in your life? Like, at this point, were you already skiing heavy?
I had just started. So I found out that, football, I have something called horseshoe kidneys. So my kidneys are not in the regular position in your anatomy. My kidneys are essentially in the center of my stomach. So I found out that hockey, football, any contact sports were out, because if I took a blow to my stomach, I could get seriously hurt or even killed because of that kind of injury. So, you know, all the games that my brothers did were kind of out. And a friend of the family's, the same age as mine, a friend of ours, when I say ours, I mean my younger brother, Jim, because we did everything together. He was 1 year younger than me. And a friend of ours was in freestyle skiing in Red Deer, and he said, why don't you come on out and try it? So, I started hunting at the same time that I started freestyle skiing, yes. And it was an amazing thing. I had a little bit of natural talent, you know, and I had amazing coaches. I had not so much amazing coaches. I had amazing friends. The Central Alberta Freestyle Ski Club at the time, our head coach, Pat Henry, got taken to the World Cup team. So we lost our head coach, but we had a whole bunch of young guys that were in junior high and high school that were level one coaches and that encouraged each other. And we learned a lot. And over the next 13 years. Yeah. It was an amazing ride. I learned how to do a lot of things with freestyle skiing. The pinnacle, I guess, for me was in 1988. They invited certain skiers to come, obviously. And yeah, I got to ski in front of the Olympic judges and got 14th. My score would have been good enough for 14th in the world, man. Like that's the way it is. It was the most amazing thing I'd ever done, you know.
Wow. And that was 1988 Calgary Winter Olympics, right?
Calgary 88. Yeah, yeah. My dad phoned me up, as a matter of fact. And he phoned me up. I was in Red Deer and he phoned me up. Dad had volunteered. Remember the old yellow suit back in those days? And Dad phoned me up and he goes, "Look, Ed, if you can make it to the aerial site at Canada Olympic Park in an hour, I've got credentials waiting for you and you can compete in the Olympics." And I was like, "Oh, see you in an hour." Back then I used to leave my skis in the car. I went through Bowdoin at like 140, you know, like, and yeah, I showed up, I had the credentials and yeah, I got to compete with some of the most amazing skiers in the world. Yeah. It was awesome. It was fantastic.
Wow. Oddly enough, like, I don't know what this would have been, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, we grabbed a second kind of beater vehicle as a family vehicle before I got into my current truck and everything like that. But it was actually a 1988 Volkswagen Jetta Winter Olympic Edition.
Wow, that's fantastic.
I don't know if you ever saw, but they did like a vehicle at that time and like the center console in the back seat folded down and there was this like ski sleeve so you could put your skis like through the center console into the car, like from the trunk, right? And it would like sleeve your skis in so it wouldn't melt snow in the cab or whatever into the car. But
very cool.
I unfortunately got rid of it like, I don't know, a few years back, but I kind of laughed because I was like, I didn't know they did a Winter Olympic version of this car. It was older than me, of course, but by a couple of years. But
yeah.
It's about that German engineering, but that's crazy that you got that opportunity. And it, even still to this day, like that Canadian Olympic Park is just still so wild when you drive by it, just to see it's still in full operation and everything. But the stuff you guys were doing at that time is just crazy. Still is crazy to this day.
It was in its infancy then. And for example, because of the Calgary Olympics coming up, ABC Wide World of Sports, you know, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, right? They had no, video footage to showcase freestyle skiing at the time. So ABC Sports came to Red Deer, Canyon Ski Hill. And of course, back then video recording equipment was, you know, it was different. So they needed some freestyle skiing pictures and video, from the skiers aspect for the opening credits of ABC Sports. So they strapped VCRs to our backs and taped camcorders to our heads with big VHS tapes in the things. And they made us do tricks and that was how they got the footage for the 88 Olympics was a bunch of us with VCRs and camcorders taped to our heads.
It's like the original GoPro or something.
It is, yeah.
It was, yeah, but it weighed like 65 pounds.
We're not built the same as the boys back then, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man. And it was so much fun, you know? It was so much fun because all of us were young. Like I say, on the Red Deer team alone, there's probably 30 guys. And we all went to school together. We hung out together. So it was nothing but fun. I mean, I had these guys, you know, there were sometimes my mom and dad had 25 people in the house at night, you know?
Wow. That's nuts. So in that like community, like you're saying, of the Central Alberta, like skiing community at that time, were you one of the only ones that was like an avid outdoorsman and hunting, or was that kind of something that played along into a lot of people in that time frame?
No, you hit the head on you hit the head of the nail. Absolutely. So when I was in junior high school, I knew of only one other person in my whole school, and that school was a large school. I can't remember how many, but it was a large school, several hundred kids. And I knew of only one other person that hunted in the whole entire school. And wow. It was, hunting was, I'm not going to say phased out, but it was definitely disappearing. You could see, you know, paper bags were disappearing. They were going to plastic. Grocery stores, you got your meat from grocery stores. You didn't have to go hunting back then, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was changing, and I was lucky and fortunate enough that no, my father wanted to, it wasn't then about getting meat to sustain the family. It was now a sport, and this was going to be fun. And you know, I've always hunted for meat, and I've never actually targeted or hunted for trophies, believe it or not. But yeah, it was starting to disappear. So while I was freestyle skiing, there were many, many people on the team that were kind of shocked, because there were some times on the weekends when I should be training and I was going hunting.
Nice.
And they were kind of shocked with that. And I didn't care, you know. I mean, in my bedroom, there were certain books. There was Alberta Outdoorsman and Western Sportsman magazine. And there was the latest edition of Ski Canada, you know. And those were the things that I lived for back then. It was awesome. And, of course, my dad and my younger brother, they were right there with me. And my mom, too. But she was horrified at what we were doing on skis. She couldn't handle us doing the flips, and yeah, she didn't want to see her boys doing that.
Yeah. You know, I feel that way now with a son. Now I'm like, same thing, kind of like grew up just avid skateboarding, just kind of wrecking the body for sure over flights of stairs. And now when I see my son, it's like, you know, same thing with snowboarding and stuff. Now it's like, put on a helmet, knee pads, wrist guards, like, get, don't, you know, like,
yeah, yeah.
That was the worst when I was a kid, being like, I'm not wearing a helmet, I'm not doing anything. And then you have kids of your own, and all of a sudden you're like, I couldn't bear to see him do that, you know.
I remember I in a way I made a mistake. I was trying to show off how smart I was with regards to being an outdoorsman back then. So in grade 9, the school, the junior high school, had announced that they were going to go on a camping trip overnight into the woods. And I'm sorry, I can't remember where it was, but it was someplace out by Nordegg. And they were going to go camping for 3 days into the woods. It was October, so it wasn't going to be too cold. And I just simply asked one question, and I said, are the kids going to be wearing red because you're taking them into a legal hunting zone? Yeah. Well, that was a wrong question to ask. They canceled the trip, and I was the most hated kid in school because they had no idea that it was a hunting zone. And when they found out that it was, they didn't want to take all the kids into a legal hunting zone. So,
wow.
You know, so yeah, I wasn't popular with that one, but that's okay. You know, it was education. They had to learn, you know, you're going to the woods, it's a hunting zone. And back then we had all hunters had to wear red. It wasn't orange. They had to wear red, and they had to wear full length, full sleeves down to your wrist, red coats.
Hmm.
Maybe it's just my ignorance, but I would have figured back in those days, more people would have been understanding of, you know, hunting seasons and the dangers of, you know, maybe walking around the woods without wearing bright colors in those days. But it's surprising to me to hear that it's actually the opposite.
I think, like I say, it was because people were getting away from it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
TV dinners, McDonald's. I remember the first McDonald's that came to Red Deer, you know, and the hunting and a sustenance kind of lifestyle wasn't in the cards for so many people. We had got our own Red Deer College, you know, we were becoming civilized, so to speak. And yet at the same time, you're losing so much of of your heritage and and the lifestyle. And yeah, it was strange to think that all these people had no idea even how to plant a garden, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting because when you're talking about it, it really sounds like that was such a kind of focal point or like a huge transition of the times, like you say, to go from maybe what would be like a simpler life to all of a sudden having all of this convenience between, like, you know, grocery stores and plastic bags and, you know, fast food and drive-thrus and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it's like right in that transitional period that you got into hunting and finding your love for the connection to the wilderness and the outdoors. And it's like simultaneously the world around you just started to take off in a different direction. I couldn't imagine what it would have been like in that transition. Cause I think now, like, Luke and myself would have been more so like we're on the other side of it where we're still trying to advocate for, you know, the beauty of the outdoors and that people are missing tons by not like not even glancing into the world of hunting and fishing and everything. Right.
Yeah. But yeah.
To be during that time frame must have been just so weird to watch it kind of happen in the 80s.
They were walking away from it. They were embracing it. You know, I remember in junior high school, the first computers that were coming out. And everybody was excited about computers and whatnot. And obviously, it was an amazing thing. But they were forgetting. They were forgetting where they came from.
Mm-hmm. So you were kind of going against the grain of the modern day, hey?
Very, not so much against the grain, but, you know, they like Aaron said, these guys were missing. They were missing so much, you know, so much beauty, so much knowledge out in the woods. It was safer out in the woods too. I mean. You know, it was a different time. It was definitely a different time.
It reminds me now of, I don't know if you guys have ever seen those magazines called Adbusters, but there was an Adbusters magazine and they're always just like, I don't know, pretty politically driven, but I don't know, from almost like maybe an anarchist standpoint, I don't even know what the heck you'd call it, but they had this full page spread. And on the left side, there was all these images of plants and on the right side, there's all these images of like corporate logos. And the concept of it was just that it was a shame that you could name almost every corporate logo on the one page, but on the other page, it was like, you can. And I mean, I'm guilty of it. You know what I mean? Like I looked at that and I was like, no freaking clue. Right. But it's like an embarrassment almost, like you say that in that transition period that, you know, people couldn't even tell you how much education there was in the outdoors or anything about it, but everything was moving in such a rapid and fast direction, a different way. That's crazy.
It really was. It really was. You know, I mean, people didn't know how to pick wild berries. This is where I was so lucky because my parents being older, and their parents, of course, growing up in say the 1930s and my parents living as children in the 1930s, my parents passed the knowledge on to me. So I learned how to pick berries and identify plants, and I learned how to sew, and I learned how to knit, and I learned how to work on cars and work on my own vehicles, and I was different from other people. When I was skiing, believe it or not, one of my very dear friends coined my nickname Garden Shed Ed because no matter what you needed. I had it. I had that tool with me, or I had something with me that we could make it work. And he ended up calling me Shed forever. He still does this day.
That's a good name.
Yeah, we better not get us going on that. We'll call you that forever. Yeah.
Oh, I don't care.
Old Shed.
What's up, Shed?
Yeah. How's it going, guys?
Too good.
I like that. It's like original MacGyver stuff.
What it was. I mean, you know, we're out there skiing freestyle, and he'd be like, "Oh man, we got to adjust the bindings," and I'd be like, "I got tools in the truck down there," and he'd be like, "Okay, Shed, go get the tools." Like, okay, man, I'll go get the stuff. You know, or we're out there and we're in the trees and we're dry land training in the fall, and Brad would say to me, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, I'm eating Saskatoons." He's like, "Well, you're eating what?" And I said, "I'm eating Saskatoons, man. What? How do you know they're not poisonous?" I'm like, "Because I know they're Saskatoons." You know, my parents taught me how to identify plants, man.
That's funny.
Knowledge is power, as they say, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so going throughout life with that, like, you've been buying tags and hunting as an Alberta resident for how many years now?
Like, the 2024 season is going to be my 41st year holding an Alberta hunting license.
In a row? Wow.
In a row. From that day one, I was hooked, and I've never missed a season. Now, there have been a couple of seasons that I haven't hunted, okay, mm-hmm. simply because my wife and I had kids when we were very little. We were very young. I shouldn't say little. We were just very young. And there were times when I bought the license because I wanted to make sure that I kept my draw status good. But unfortunately, yeah. I just might not have been able to get out. But there were only maybe one or two seasons. Believe me, I'm hooked on hunting. I tell people come hunting season, hey, I hope you're not planning anything big because I'm probably not coming. My daughter, Rebecca, she will attest to this. Her birthday is in October, and I've missed several of her birthdays.
That's a tough birthday to have, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So how many kids do you have now? I know you got Patrick, Rebecca, Cassandra. Like, I'm trying to think of all of them.
I have four children, Christine, Cassandra, Rebecca, and then the Hail Mary Patrick.
The Hail, so the son finally that came
through.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Worked out for you.
It was a nice day. I remember we went in and we had the three girls. We went into the doctor's office to have an ultrasound done. The doctor said, "Would you like to know the gender of the baby?" And my wife said, "Oh, no." And I was like, yeah, I do. Yeah, I really do. And he said, "Okay, come on outside." So he told me I was having a boy. And this was like, say, 3 months, 4 months into it. And my wife didn't want to know, so I didn't tell her. And I didn't tell her until Patrick was born. And
wow,
I want her to be surprised, right? And she was so excited because there hadn't been a boy born to her side of the family in like 30 years. So when she found out that it was going to be a boy, or when Patrick was born, I guess, you know, and then there he is, it's a boy. She was super, super, super excited, man.
I don't know how you could keep that.
We would go shopping and she would hold up pink pajamas and blue pajamas. And she'd be like, "Which ones do you think would be best for the baby?" And I'd be like, "Well, they're probably going to puke on both of them. So pick them both up."
That's funny.
I'm surprised you couldn't read the smile on your face when you came back in and the doctor told yourself, you know?
No, that's one thing. If you're not supposed to know something, you won't hear it from me. I'm sorry. I'm old school, man. My hands shake right. My word, right? Like,
that's those right. are
things that my dad instilled into me. You know, he lived by his handshake and he lived by his word, and I try to do the same.
Yeah, sometimes that's all a man has, right? That's crazy to think.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And so, throughout them growing up, what was it like? Because I know from, obviously, like, chatting with some of your kids and stuff too, they're heavily into the hunting world. I know, I think you'd made a post there a while back that was like you and Patrick have successfully filled tags for like 12 years in a row or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was it like getting them into hunting when they were young? Like, what did they all take to it, or?
Absolutely. I mean, so I had three girls and I didn't want to. My mom was nice enough that she taught me how to knit, how to sew, how to clean, how to do my own laundry, how to make food. You know, in the same breath, I was learning how to hunt and how to fish and how to work on vehicles and things like this. So I chose to do the exact same thing with my daughters, and I would take them hunting and I would take them fishing and I would taught them how to pack wheel bearings and, You know, I want to give them the exact same opportunities. I always told my daughters that you don't need to rely on someone. You can do it yourself, dear. So, you know, yeah, we would go hunting and camping and you know, with the girls, there was some tweaks that you had to make. You know, I mean, you're wondering why they're putting on lipstick and mascara and stuff. You know, we're going hunting. I'm like, yeah, but I want to look good for the pictures. Okay. You know, and the other one was, you know, I remember on one particular hunting trip, I went out with my daughter Rebecca, and we got a nice 3-point muley buck, and Rebecca said, "I'll help you, Dad." And I looked back, and she was wearing white blue jeans, white skin tight blue jeans. And I looked at her, and I was like, "That's what you chose to wear out hunting?" And she's like, "Oh yeah, sorry. Maybe, well, you can do it, Dad. You'll be okay."
You know? That's what I'm gonna do on our bear trip, Luke. I'm gonna wear white clothes and just, you can pack my barrel for me.
You know, and
it's a great method.
Yeah. It is, you know. Yeah. And the other thing that she would do too, she would never wear her own clothes. I would get ready to go out hunting, and Rebecca would come out wearing my clothing. And she's got pants that are, you know, four sizes too big, and my boots on, and she's got a granola bar hanging out of her mouth, and she's like, "Okay, Dad, let's go. I can get your clothes dirty. That's no problem."
That's hilarious.
Too good.
And of course, you know, all of them really took a shine to it.
Yeah.
My daughter Christine is a distance runner. Incredible outdoorsman, has hiked the Skyline Trail. Man, her accomplishments are so long, it's unreal. She's run marathons all around the world, 24-hour marathons, the whole bit. So yeah, and Cassandra, the same thing. She lives out in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, and she just started teaching her sons, Ethan 10, my grandsons, Ethan 10 and Raiden 5 years old, and they were out hunting with her last year. It was awesome.
Nice. That's unreal to see. That's cool.
And of course, Patrick, he lives in Rocky Mountain House, and yeah, I was just talking to him tonight. Yeah, we're getting ready to sight some rifles in bear season right around the corner.
Wow. That's super, super, super exciting. So what are you guys bringing with you for bear season?
Well, before we move on to that, I got to tell you this one because my kids, they asked me to tell you this.
Okay.
Let's hear it.
Well, they had, they in turn, because of me being a hunter in this day and age, it was something that they kind of were weirded out about. Not that they were weirded out about, but our neighbors were. You see, I lived in townhouses, and I didn't have a garage. So come hunting season, their swing set out back turned into my meat hanging area. And yeah, I would hang animals from their swing set and teach them how to skin deer and whatnot right from their swing set.
That's genius.
It looks almost purpose built when I'm picturing it in my head. You know?
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, it was fantastic.
Got the eye loops there to hang the gambrel from. You know, works it well.
Yeah.
And so, before, did you ever weird looks from the neighbors or anything?
Oh
or?
Yeah. Lots of weird looks. Lots of neighbors didn't talk to me. You know, like I never had issues with my neighbors. You know,
if I was your neighbor, I'd be asking for jerky.
Yeah.
Everybody always asked me for jerky. Before I was a welder, I was a butcher for 17 years.
Wow.
Nice. Know your way around a knife.
Yeah. So yeah, that was another thing that I passed on to the kids too, right? They all know how to use a knife. They all know how to gut animals and harvest everything properly, you know. So,
and what just like invaluable skills to pass on, because nowadays that's, I don't know, like it's hard to say, but it almost sucks to hear how much people just aren't taught those life skills and are just really lost. Like you say, you like they end up relying on someone or needing someone or always having to make a phone call and all this stuff. And I mean, we've all been there and need to do that, but it's, you know, it's just something when you can, like you said, give them those skills and that skill set to be able to handle anything life throws at them, really, and kind of get to work on whatever they need to do to fix a situation, whether it's a flat tire on a vehicle or, you know, eating while they're out in the bush if they run out of food, or you know, how to skin a deer and, you know, do all the butchering work and stuff like that. Like, it's huge.
Absolutely. It really is. And the most wonderful part about the whole thing is I get to now watch my children teaching my grandchildren, teaching their children how to do it. You know, I just had my first granddaughter, and she's only 6 months old, and I've already asked Rebecca, is it okay if I take her hunting this fall?
Yeah.
Perfect. You know, so yeah, I'm super excited to watch them pass on family traditions. I just sent Cassandra a box, and in the box are, you know, some things that are kind of special, you know, a hunting knife from my dad. So it could be, that knife could be as much as 50 or 60 years old.
Wow.
You know, and now she's going to be using it, doing the same thing. Patrick has a steel from my father. It's probably 50 or 60 years old again, too. I got the recipes from, I think on the one book it says here, 1973, and all the kids have the recipes for how to make hamburgers.
Wow. And so when you were showing your kids hunting and stuff as they were growing up and everything, was there any really specific moments that stood out, like of their first successes or anything like that, that kind of just blew you away?
You know, I can't think of anything that they did that stuck out. I know that's horrible to say, because every season they do something that is just incredible, whether it's an animal that they got the opportunity to see, or an animal that they got the opportunity to harvest, or even just something that happened out there. They've done incredible things. As far as a story that for me is the most incredible, you guys do something that I don't do at all. You guys bow hunt. I don't bow hunt.
Yeah.
I bow hunted 1 year, and unfortunately, because of not having enough time to go out and do proper scouting, hang the trail cameras, things like this, I have used the knowledge that was taught to me by my dad and the skills that I've learned over the last 40 plus years. And I go into an area and I look at the area and I read the area and I go looking for game. And, you know, I mean, that's how I hunt. I hunt with a rifle. But I did hunt 1 year with a bow. And I did and was successful.
Good for you.
I decided to take up bow hunting because I wanted to see what the fuss was all about. Like, I really wanted to. And I went to a pawn shop, and there's a bow on the rack, and I picked it up, and I said, okay, this will work. And I had no idea what I was doing. Like, I really didn't have a clue. I went to Canadian Tire and picked up a release, didn't know what it was. And I took it to a range that was downtown. There was nobody there. It was in a building downtown. There was nobody there that could help you with anything. They took your $5. You could go in. There were some targets upstairs, and that was it. I ended up meeting a gentleman by the name of Jerry at Wholesale Sports here in town. And Jerry was kind enough to look at me and go, holy cow, dude, you don't have a clue what you're doing. And he said to me, this bow is supposed to be shot with fingers. And I'm like, well, I don't want to shoot with fingers. And he's like, oh, okay. So he set me up and gave me the equipment. He gave me the proper arrows that I needed, and I started practicing. And by the fall of that year, I was actually I was actually hitting what I was aiming at. I couldn't believe it. It was quite incredible. And I went out to my brother's place, my brother's property. He has 100 acres of land just west of Caroline, Alberta. And I was able to, well, what happened was this. We got out there, it was September, and there was a heavy snowstorm. And at first I thought I wasn't going to be able to go. It ended up that I did get a chance to go out there. And we got out there. My dad came up here to Edmonton, picked me up. He drove me out there. And I had been practicing and thinking that I knew what I was doing. And my brother, we were putting some hay bales away in the hay shed. And he goes, "Hey, Ed, I knew you were coming. I set up a couple of ground blinds with the hay bales." And he looks at his watch and he goes, "Hey, it's 4 o'clock. You better go over to that ground blind because those deer have been walking by there every day at 4 o'clock." And I was like, "Yeah, okay, whatever." And I said, "Well, let's just put the hay bales away." And sure enough, at 4 o'clock, yeah, there's the deer standing like 10 yards away from the hay bales. It's like, okay, I guess I should listen to him. Well, the next morning, I got up bright and early. And of course, I don't agree with playing the wind or anything like that back in those days. So I have a coffee cup in one hand and a cigarette in the other, and my bow actually hanging on a homemade belt hanger that I could, so I could walk with a coffee and a cigarette. And I'm walking out towards the stand, and here's like a, I don't know, 4x4 whitetail buck about 8 yards away standing broadside right in front of me. And I'm like, "Oh, well, made a mistake too." So it ran away. But by the third day, I'd figured out that maybe there's more to this, and maybe I should start listening to what is supposed to happen. And on the third day, I started in. I was serious about it this time. I was standing just inside the fence line. I had about 8 mule deer walking right up to the fence, and the lead doe, she was probably no more than 6 or 7 yards away from me. And the last deer was a 3x3 buck, and we had marked it out. There was a hay bale, big round bale, that was out there at 30 yards. So I knew that if he came inside that, I could put my 30 yard pin on him and get him. And when I drew the bow, the doe, that lead doe, she was looking at me, and she made the slightest vocalization. And I'm now at full draw, and I lean to my right to go around the tree sort of thing that the buck was, and he had turned around and he was leaving the field. She had told him to leave. And I got lucky. I let the arrow fly. It was like slow motion. I watched it disappear completely right into the buck right behind his shoulder. And he took off. I thought, that's not like rifle hunting at all. he ran away. What? You know? And I put a glove down where I was standing from where I shot. I walked out. I found a great blood trail. And it ran probably about 300 yards, jumped in the Clearwater River, swam downstream about 600 yards, crossed the river, and died on the other side.
Wow.
Gee whiz.
I did get it back. I did get the deer back. But yeah, it was a testament of how strong they really are, man. He made it probably a kilometer and crossed the Clearwater River.
You know? Well, that's hats off to you for that tracking job too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was... these are things that my dad taught me. You know, he's not going to swim upstream; he's going to swim down, mm-hmm. right? And I kept on. The blood trail was fantastic. It looked like a 2-liter bottle shook up and sprayed across the ground. I mean, there was an amazing blood trail. So there was no trouble following him, and it led right to the river's edge. And it was like, wow, I can't believe he actually went in there to try to get away.
Wow.
And yeah, found him on the other side of the river, probably, I don't know, maybe 400 yards downstream.
Well, that is like a testament to, yeah, everything with, like Luke was saying too, with tracking and everything. But it's just, there's so many people that assume like, they won't go over 300 yards, or they won't go over, you know, if you lost blood at 400 yards, it's alive and it was a bad shot or something, you know? And it's just, I think those stories are so valuable for people to hear and be like, you know what, like, you got to keep looking, like, you got to keep following, because yeah, well, I mean, it's one thing too, like you say, when you got a blood trail like that, that's like a ketchup bottle spraying everywhere. But
yeah. No, it's there's so much to learn, and yeah, keep at it. Like, if you know you've hit them, and stop, take your time, you know, look around, seriously look around. So many times I've had a deer jump straight sideways and mm-hmm. literally turn around, double back and lay down. And I have literally walked right past that deer within 8-10 feet. And it was laying down straight beside me because I had my head too busy into the blood and into the tracks, you know? So.
Yeah. You know, it's just wild. Like that. It reminds me of some stories too, like Zach Hazer with his that doubled back on him and stuff. And just guys that have had similar encounters. And it's just, like you say, you got to sometimes just pick your head up and look around too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's unreal, though.
It's so, you know, the animals, they're so strong and they're so smart and so intelligent. You guys that are bow hunters now, I'll be the first to admit, you know, I mean, 90% of my animals I shoot and I'm lucky enough to be inside 100 yards. Mm-hmm. But you guys are shooting them inside like 30 yards, 20 yards, 8 yards. It's like, I can't even, you know, you guys are looking at eyelashes and things like that. It's amazing. It's amazing what you guys can do as bow hunters. It truly is, the way you play wind and the way you use rattles. Last year, for example, I was talking with a hunter that is on the on Wild TV, the Alberta Bozone Live. And
oh,
I was
yeah.
talking with Logan Johnson, and I asked him a little bit about some information about where he thought I should hunt, and we both agreed on the same thing. But you guys think as bow hunters, you think and learn so much and get so in depth with it that it's incredible, man. You can really see the passion that you guys have, and it's amazing to watch, and it's amazing to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Logan there, he runs the Trophy Vault, right?
He does, yeah. He does some amazing stuff with 3D printing, and he's incredible guy, really great guy, nice guy. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that he does with Trophy Vault is second to none. I mean, I never even, you know, it was, that's kind of something that I never even thought of, you know, because I haven't got any big mounts, but I have some nice antlers and whatnot. And yeah, you could lose them in a fire.
Oh.
And with this, you don't. You got them right there exactly once again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy because, yeah, so it's like, and I think you're familiar with it too, Luke, right? Where it's like you scan the head of the animal and you can like just have the file so that a replica can be made if need be, or you can make like, of course, like miniatures or other things like that.
Yeah.
But it's like, I can't remember. I think you said to me, Luke, when I took that deer this year, that like you've heard of guys, you know, buying taxidermy for crazy amounts of money from like the States or something like that in auctions and stuff. Right. And that like, sometimes, like, not only, like you said, Ed, like, fires and stuff, but...
Yeah, yeah.
It can also just be, like, straight stolen. Like, people will just, like, steal that kind of stuff, right? Like...
Absolutely, yes. And with Trophy Vault, man, it's just a matter of, oh, hang on, let me hit enter on the computer, and we'll come back tomorrow, and there's your trophy, man.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, I don't know how long it would take. I mean, you'd have to talk to Logan, but that is essentially the gist of it, man. He can recreate your trophy identical, absolutely mm-hmm. identical. It's amazing work that he's done, and he's done all that stuff himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he figured out how to do it all and input all the information. Amazing work, absolutely amazing work.
Crazy,
and all that is passion. That's passion from a bow hunter. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's remarkable. And I mean, to go back to like you were saying with, you know, talking to him about playing the wind and all that stuff within bow hunting and stuff. It's funny, but I also think it's funny, like you say, when you bump into a deer with a coffee and cigarette in hand, you know, so sometimes it's extremely like it feels like the most badass skill set to get, you know, sub 20 yards and shoot a deer at 10 or 15 yards. But then in the same instance, like sometimes, yeah, you can just bump into them while you're windage and, you know, the wind's blowing at them with a
Sometimes you get really lucky. Last year, my daughter, Rebecca, she is training to be a pilot right now. And her time is very precious. Yeah. She wants to be an airline pilot, and she's really studying hard to do that. So last November, she asked me if she could come out. And again, Rebecca, we're in the truck, and I look over at her, and I'm like, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "You know, I'm putting on the mascara. Gotta look good for the pictures." And I'm like, "Holy cow, Rebecca!" Like, and she's wearing my clothes again too, just like normal. Anyhow, we start walking in, and Rebecca she's my daughter, the one that just had my granddaughter, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty smitten with my granddaughter. And Rebecca, we start in on this one trail, and we spook up a couple of does, and Rebecca looks at me and goes, "Hey, look, Dad, like I got something to tell you here." And I said, "What's up?" She goes, "I forgot my glasses. I can't see anything." And I said, "Okay, so you're just out here for selfies, right?" She's like, "Well, maybe a little, you know, like, kind of, you know, let's get the exercise." I'm like, "Okay, dear, thanks. You know, last day of the year, and I've held this tag just out for the end for my buck, and now I'm out with you. That's awesome. Thanks, dear." So anyhow, Rebecca looked at me and she goes, "Hey, Dad, you know, the sooner we shoot this buck, the sooner we can go home for baby snuggles." And I looked at her and I was like, "Oh, wow, that's kind of interesting. That's a good idea there, Rebecca." And, you know, I have taught them how to hunt, and I taught them how to do all these things. So, yeah, the next 70 yards, we walked up, and Rebecca and I stayed quiet. We kept the wind in our face, and we walked right up in on a 5x5 whitetail buck that was still in his bed with his girlfriend, and we got a nice 5x5 right there.
Wow.
Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. Man, I'm just thinking about it. I'm like, through the years, it's like probably just a lot of exceptional moments and encounters like that, especially with family or friends or anything. What would you say from, you know, going back to when you first got into it with your brother and your dad and everything there, and through the years of change from like the 80s, 90s, 2000s, what are kind of like the biggest significant changes that you've seen from when you first started buying tags to 2024.
Fine. Absolutely. I've seen some amazing changes. I think the biggest change, to be honest, and I really do think that this is one of the biggest changes, is ladies in the sport.
Yeah, nice.
When I first started hunting, it really seemed to be a male dominated sport. We're going back to the 1980s. So when my dad was hunting, you know, it was, you know, the ladies stayed home and cooked, and the men went out and did things. And my dad, because of his age, it even played out a little bit for me, because of their age, you know, they believed that, you know, mom would stay home and the boys would go hunting. Well, I had daughters, and I encouraged them. I saw ladies like, Melissa Bachman and Tiffany Lakoski, and the some of the TV shows that were on at the time. And I had three daughters. I had one that had dark hair, one that had red hair, and one that had blonde hair. And I said to them, "Look, ladies, I can make us all millionaires. All you need to do is start videotaping when you're out hunting. Okay, when we go out hunting, let's let's take 5 minutes, and you guys tell everybody how to light a campfire, or tell them how to make a whistle out of a tree branch or something." And they all looked at me like, "No, Dad, we're not doing that. I'm not interested in doing that, man. No." And yeah, that's okay. That's fine. But ladies hunting, there were none when I was little. And now It is a huge part of the sport and probably one of the most exciting in the sport because everybody's doing it. It's it's sharing the passion of getting out in the outdoors, about getting out hunting and doing the things we do. The more people you can share it with, the better it is. You know, but that would be the biggest. There were no ladies doing it. Now, it's a delight to see ladies doing it all the time.
Yeah, no, that's really true though too, and it is definitely. I could see it being extremely significant over the time period for like many reasons, but now it's just so cool to see, like exactly like you said, how many influential women are in the outdoors world, just inspiring other women or other people in general to get out and enjoy life that way.
Absolutely. I mean, Amanda Lynn Mayhew, man. Yeah. Wow. She is such an amazing advocate for ladies in the sport. And then there are some ladies with the CCFR that do amazing things. I mean, you know, the names escape me, and I'm, you know, maybe it's because I'm getting older and I lose my mind. I don't know, but I can't remember some of their names, you know, but wow, they're doing such amazing things for ladies and for the sport, and that's pushing it into the next generation, and that's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, even I know like Alberta's own, you know, Lisa Roper, but
absolutely, yeah,
her like recently doing the Ladies on Ice, I think it's called, or whatever, the ice fishing event she does every year. That's like all women out there, and like, man, the turnout they had this year was like, I think 150 or something like that, just over 150 women out there fishing. And I was like, man, what an amazing turnout for that. But
yeah, it's great to see for sure.
Yeah,
it really is, man. It really, truly is, you know, all these sports for so many years were male dominated. Yeah. They really were. And, you know, now, man, I absolutely love seeing the girls kicking butt and taking names, man. It is awesome. I mean, I taught my daughters the same thing. You never needed to rely on a guy for doing anything. And when they get out there and you know, one of them wants to be a pilot and the next one is an extreme athlete, and you got another one that is a gunsmith and a range safety officer, you know, like,
yeah,
they're doing things that girls didn't do 20, 30 years ago, you know?
Yeah. No, it's true. And it's cool to see because, yeah, I didn't realize, like, it took me a little bit to connect the dots that, like, the whole Tetley family was following us and we were following the whole Tetley family or whatever. But once I started to connect the dots, I was like, man, you guys are all badass. Like, you guys are all doing such cool stuff.
I don't know if we're badass or not. We just like doing it. And, you know, we're proud Albertans, proud Canadians. Like, yeah. I got a Canadian flag out on the front lawn. I'm looking at, I don't know, six or seven of them down here in the basement. I got pictures and whatnot of my multiple family members that fought in the wars. We are patriots. We and hunting in Alberta, and let's have beef and let's go get some oil. Like, you know, I mean, I am the typical Alberta boy. I really, truly am. And I raised the daughters the same way, the son the same way. Patrick, you know, he's an amazing mechanic, you know, and these guys blow me away every single day with the stuff that they do.
That's too cool. Man. No, it's just so nice to hear all of that. And yeah, seeing, I think Patrick's too there, like all the trucks and stuff he was working on. And it's like, it's too cool to see that, yeah, that's still being passed down and it's so important. Like, we can never lose sight of all those things that you were taught and that you've passed down to your kids, and that now they're passing down to the next generation. That's incredible for sure.
It really is. It's nice to see. And you know, I talk to my children all the time. I talk to Cassandra. Usually I'm talking to her at 6 o'clock in the morning on the phone as I'm on my way to work. And and these guys are doing amazing things all the time. Cassandra is absolutely killing it. She took up hunting last year out there in Nova Scotia. She'd hunted in Alberta, but never in another province. So she got everything together. She didn't know where to go. She didn't know what to do, but she knew what she knew, and she was out there last year. She didn't harvest one last year, but she saw lots of game. She just didn't get a chance to shoot. She got a couple mm-hmm. of gross, and that's the beginning. You know, she's teaching her boys, and that's the beginning, and that's the spark that's going to give those boys the opportunity to do that kind of stuff too. You know.
Mm-hmm. And that's still success to be out there and have close opportunities and all of that. So,
you know, that's the thing too. I never trophy hunt. I never have. I mean, if it's a legal doe and we meat hunt, like I say, I was a butcher for 17 years. We hunt for the meat, you know, every year, I make a bunch of pepperoni and usually Rebecca skims off the top immediately. Rebecca, you know, I'll make 30 pounds of pepperoni and Rebecca would be like, no, you only made 24. I'm like, oh, hey, okay. They're doing amazing things. They really are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's incredible. And so this now, this is your 41st year or 42nd year now that you're
41. 41
years. 41? Yeah. Okay.
41.
Which is like, yeah, I can't even. So with it being your 41st year now, you're going into spring bear. Like, what do you have all planned out for spring, fall?
Well, for my 41st year, my son Patrick and a friend of the family, they want to go out for bears. So we're going to go out. We're going to maybe try baiting for the first time. We've only ever done spot and stalk for bears.
Nice.
We have been successful and it was pretty awesome. But we're going to see maybe if we can go for that. But there's talk and there's rumors. Like I say, in 41 years, I have never seen a bull elk in a legal hunting zone. Okay. And I know that sounds absurd, but I've never targeted the species. Okay. Wow. And if you think back earlier, I told you that I don't have a lot of time for going out and scouting or things like that. So I know I pick an area and I go in and I work the area and whatever happens to come to me, then great, God willing, I get the opportunity to harvest it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there's talk that maybe it's time that Dad get an elk. So the kids are considering maybe actually going in after some elk in the fall. So looking forward to that, maybe, you know. Other than that, just I'm looking forward to another amazing season. I don't know what it's going to bring. It's going to be crazy, though. There'll be ups and downs. I'm sure somebody's going to miss and somebody's going to connect. And other than that, it's just going to be great times in the woods. Really, really, truly is, you know.
That's beautiful.
Last year, we took a friend out, and he had never made a campfire. He'd never made a campfire. We sat down one lunch and we taught him how to make a campfire. He was on cloud nine the whole day.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah. I think, like, you know, both Luke and I are more of the tagline kind of adult onset hunters. Like, we got into it a little bit later in life and, you know, things like that, like you're saying, like, yeah, making a campfire, it's just like, it's crazy, like when you would say, you know, you're teaching your kids all these things at such a young age, and then there's still lots of people out there that haven't started a fire, even with like flint and steel or, you know,
yeah,
really basic ways. And it's like, man, it's valuable stuff to learn at absolutely any age. I know people that started hunting at 45 years old and are now going to buy a tag for the rest of the years that they can, you know, get out and hunt because they're just hooked on it at 45, you know, like it's,
yeah.
It's never too late to learn anything. Like, it's crazy.
It's never too late to learn. And honestly, Alberta is such a wonderful place to go because you have a tremendous amount of crown land that you can go out on.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take your time, you will have an amazing experience. Even if you don't harvest anything, you're going to see things that are going to be amazing. You're going to see wildlife that you've never seen before that people talk about, and you'll be able to see it firsthand, you know? Mm-hmm.
And I love that take.
Yeah. it's so exciting every time we get out there. Cassandra called me this morning. She said, "Dad, guess what?" And I said, "What?" She goes, "I saw a mink." And I was like, "No way, you saw a mink today?" She's like, "Yeah, we were down by the shore. I saw my first mink."
Crazy.
You know, that's awesome. She's going to go back and she's going to grab the boys and she's going to take those kids in and she's going to show them a mink. And they're going to show their kids a mink someday too, years and years from now. You know, those are the things that are so special and so unique. And to be able to share the Alberta outdoors with anybody in any way, shape, and form, whether you're dropping a fly into that pool and pulling out your first cutthroat trout, or you're glassing over a field and there's a herd of pronghorn antelope out there, you know. There's so much diversity and so much game that you can go out and see and just have fun with that even if you don't harvest anything, you just had the best day of your life.
Yeah. I could sit in that visualization that you're painting there for, yeah, a long time. That like truly depicts the beauty of the province for sure and everything that it has to offer. And like you say, it's tough to see some guys go home some days and go, "Oh, I didn't get anything," and whatever. And it's like, man, every day you get to experience that, you're truly blessed or winning, you know?
Yeah. And coming from Newfoundland, as a young adult and getting in the hunting that way, I mean, just seeing, like you were just saying, Ed, the elk, the antelope, you know, just, they were foreign to me. So just moving to the mainland and seeing these kinds of creatures out here, out west here. And yeah, they're absolutely just phenomenal. I could just look through binoculars all day long. And it's probably my favorite part is just looking at animals, whether I have the rifle or the bow in hand. It's just such an amazing province. Like you say, no matter what you're doing, you spend time outside here and it's just a phenomenal place. Like just to add to what you're saying there.
Mm-hmm. I've truly been blessed because of my daughter and her job as a flight attendant and whatnot. I got the opportunity last year to fly to Newfoundland for the first time in my life.
Wow!
Enjoy it.
It's the most beautiful province that I've. It's amazing, man. It's absolutely amazing. I'm an honorary Newfie, by the way. I kissed the God.
Did you? You got screeched in, right?
I did.
Where did you do that? Down on George Street?
What's the name of the place there? It's a very well-known place.
Isn't that by your father's place, Luke?
Yeah. Just down the road, hop, jump, and a skip. And
yeah, there. I forget the name of the place. It's a well-known place. I know that. There was a lot of people there. They locked the door behind us. There was fire and songs and screech and codfish. And the next thing you know, I knew a different language.
Yeah, that's right. You got it. I'm glad you enjoyed your time back in my home province. That's good.
It was beautiful. It's beautiful. It doesn't matter whether you go as far east or as far west. Canada is amazing. And you've got amazing opportunities to get out in the outdoors. And Alberta Wildlife Stories, Volume 1. Man, that's it. I couldn't stop reading. Cover to cover, I couldn't stop reading. These are the stories. These are the dreams that little kids have, and they read it, and it's like, holy cow, look at that. I can get out there in a wheelchair.
Yeah,
that's right.
You know, I can. If he can do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
And yeah, anybody can do it. And you guys have hit it out of the ballpark with that magazine and with the podcast. I'm honored to have the opportunity to talk to you guys. Like, wow, amazing stuff. Amazing stuff that you guys are doing.
Yeah, thanks. I can't tell you how much that means to us, Ed, from a guy like yourself that has seen the hunting world evolved through the years and everything. And, you know, it's surreal to hear you say that kind of stuff, but you know, when you're talking about Canada from coast to coast and the province and the beauty of it and the stuff we try to highlight through you know, the magazine and the podcast and the website and the videos and everything. It's like, it's everything. I don't know who just had the train in the background there.
That was myself. Yeah, sorry.
Man, that couldn't have been more perfectly timed.
Rural Alberta.
You were talking about, like, yeah. Talking about Canada and Alberta, and you just get this, like, yeah. Like
train horn going.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I was curious if you could hear that or not.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. It just added to the touching top. But no, it's just, it's funny because it's like, you know, it's, it just really all ties together to, you know, just the thought of, you know, going back to even everything we've really talked about through this, Ed, and, you know, you learning these things, and I can't stop going back to it really mentally, is learning it from your parents, passing it to your kids, then passing it to their kids. And it's the beauty that we see, whether it's through the stuff that we're trying to share through the magazine, or like you're talking about coast to coast in Canada and the beauty that our country has. It's like, the more we talk about these things and we share these experiences with the next generations, and, you know, the stuff that you've done, you know, teaching the people and your kids and everyone around you, that will impact, you know, even our own kids' lives, like Luke's daughter and my son and stuff like that, that when they grow older, there will be people that genuinely care about these things in our country, because we have to instill that in the next generation so that we keep it, so we don't lose it, so we don't just trample all over it as society grows, you know, like it's
absolutely
passing along our heritage, right? I mean, it's,
yeah,
it's as Canadian as it gets, this kind of stuff that we're talking about here, and mm-hmm. and all the things that Ed has seen through the years and has spoken on, you know, it's very valuable stuff to pass down.
Mm-hmm. I you know, 2022, I was in the bush. I got really lucky. I was all alone. I was out hunting by myself. I got a really nice 5x5 whitetail buck. I was all alone. I immediately FaceTimed my son. You know, way to go, Dad. So anyhow, I've gotten the deer, and I hear this, "Hi, how you doing?" And I thought I was alone. Okay, and I'm back in the woods, like I'm off the beaten trail. You know, and I look around, and here's a man, and he's walking with his 4-year-old son. And I don't remember the man's name, but I remember the little boy. And he goes, "Excuse me, sir, but do you mind if my son watches you clean that animal?
Wow.
I'd like him to learn." Well, I was a butcher, and my dad taught me how to clean him. And I was like, "Absolutely." He goes, "I'll help you haul it over to your quad over there if you'll let my son and let him see you clean the animal." Well, sure. That was it, man. George has got his hands on the legs. He's got blood on his mitts, and he's and it's like, "Hell yeah, and George, yeah, this is the heart, George. You know, these are the lungs, George.
Wow.
Here's how we take it out. Here, you know that." And yeah, just, you know, I forgot that I got a nice big buck. Mm-hmm. I forgot that I got a buck, and I got back home, and I was like, "Kim," my wife, Kim, guess what I did? I got a buck today, but I taught little George how to gut a deer today.
That's She's phenomenal.
Like, "Who's George?" I said, "I don't even know who George is, but George wanted to learn how to gut a deer, so I taught him."
That's great. That's awesome.
You know, it's just it, you know, you're like, oh, to be in that moment and to get that brief opportunity to teach someone, like, I wonder, you know, that kid's going to be a couple years older now. And you know what? I bet you that memory is going to stick with that kid for his whole life. Like, those kind of things, like, really imprint on you. And you know what, when he's probably, you know, 15, maybe even 12 or whatever, when he gets of age to be hunting, he'll probably won't forget those moments with you. You know,
he's going to think back and he's going to go, "Yeah, I remember some toothless gray haired guy." me because I don't have teeth, guys. But he's going to go, "Yeah, I remember I was out hunting with my dad and some toothless gray haired guy showed me how to do this."
Yeah. So listen up. You know? This is how it's done. Yeah.
You know? Who better to learn it from though? Right.
They called him the shed.
Yeah. The shed.
That's awesome. Love it. Yeah. That's great. Good on you.
Oh man. That's such a beautiful story.
That's what you live for. That's what I live for, you know. Like, and you said, so what am I looking forward to this fall? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know, but man, I'm so excited. I'll tune up the rifles. Got a brand new Vortex scope on the 300 Win Mag.
I've seen that.
I got everything. I'm getting things ready to go, you know. My gear is top shelf. so if I miss, it's on me. It's not my gear. I know that. Or maybe I gave it to the kid and he was touching it. I don't know. I'll blame it on somebody, right?
Well, the one daughter is a gunsmith, right? You could blame it on her.
She's a stickler with things too. She's like, you know, I'm a range safety officer now, eh? And I'm like, yeah. She goes, well, when we go out target shooting, I'm going to be in charge. And I'm like, no, you're not. I'm your dad.
That's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited. I don't know what's going to happen this fall. You know, more than anything, I'm excited about watching other people. What are they going to get? Where are they going to go? You know, what are you guys going to do? Where are you going to go? I mean, I'd like to get an elk. If I don't, it's okay. You know what? That's okay. Because I've been with people that have... You know, I told them to go into that area, and they came out of that area that night with a great big 5x5, you know?
Well, we're rooting for you to get your first elk.
Yeah, that'd be nuts.
You know, it would be. Honestly, you'll hear me scream, and there will be 2,000 pictures on Instagram. I will blow up Instagram myself, believe me, if it ever happens.
It won't be a train horn in the background. It'll be Ed screaming.
It will be, because honestly, it just never happened for me.
We'll be doing some podcast in October, and you'll just hear something in the background. Like, oh, yeah, Ed got his elk.
But no, other than that, I'm just excited. You know, it's another year. I'm blessed. I'm lucky that my health is still good enough that I can get out in the trees and still do some stuff. You know, the kids are going to be out there with me. So that's going to be great. Yeah. Let's see. I don't know. Let's see what happens.
That's awesome. It's a great outlook for it, you know?
Yeah. That was exactly what I was going to say. Like, just such a well-rounded perspective I just like that idea of like, I'm excited for whatever it brings, right? Or just like, I want to
see what the opportunity is.
Absolutely. What's the tide going to bring in? And then on top of that, Alberta Wildlife Stories is coming out with another edition. Okay. Yeah. What's going to be in there?
Yeah. Oh, you yeah.
Know? Like, you know, seriously.
Our next one is June 1st.
Yeah. So
would that be June, July, August? And then we'd have a September 1st issue right into the beginning.
You're going to have an issue coming out at the beginning of rifle season.
Yeah.
You guys hit a home run. Like, man, that's, you know, it'll be sitting in everybody's hunting camp right there on the coffee table for generations to come now. You know, let's read the stories. Hey, man, look at this. See this? It says here that this guy got this animal and he was using this. And that's what I used to do, you know. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to start doing it again, but I'm going to do it with books from Alberta Wildlife Stories. That's incredible, man. Absolutely incredible.
Well, we couldn't appreciate that anymore. That just,
Yeah, my head is starting to float away here.
Yeah. But it would be just, that's like a dream of ours, you know, to just to have it in places for people to readily see the incredible people of Alberta and the stories that they have, like yourself, and the things that you've accomplished and people in our province have accomplished, you know.
And that's the whole goal, is just help people share their stories so that, you know, like yourself with your daughters and your grandchildren, you know, maybe someday they'll look back and they'll read grandpa's story or listen to grandpa's podcast. And, you know, it's, that's the whole goal, and we're super appreciative of your support, Ed.
You know, you guys giving me the opportunity to talk tonight. I know it's been scattered and bounced all over the place and the whole bit, and we've been chuckling and giggling about lots of different things, but I'll tell you, honestly, there's got to be at least 25 to 30 people that I know that are already like, hey, when is this podcast coming out? I need to know this. when I got to hear this. I'm interested. And those people are going to go and 25 more. I mean, you know, it's exciting, super exciting. And for you guys to actually allow a guy like me, you know, a relative nobody. I mean, I am a nobody, just a guy out here hunting, to talk to you guys about my favorite outdoor sport. Wow, man, what an honor. What an honor. And so exciting to see that you guys, younger, you know, early 30s, are so gung-ho and so excited about the same things that I am. Like, it's nice to know that, yeah, man, this is going to be going on for years and years and years. I'm excited.
Well, and the pleasure is all ours to have you on and to hear stories, because I think that's something that both Luke and I always look forward to, is hearing anybody share stories from all the years, right? Like, especially when you get into stories from like the 80s and 90s and your father after World War II. It's like, it's just, there's so much history and so much beauty within all the years of it that, yeah, that's some of our favorite stuff to listen to. Right?
Oh, absolutely. I have stories that, you know, going back, we're going back into the 1950s. I could tell you stories about guys, you know, my grandfather, my father, going out hunting. There weren't four-wheel drive vehicles back then. There were only positive traction cars, and some of the antics that those guys got into back in the woods. Oh, my, you know. I have so many things that I want to share with you guys. We'd be talking for hours, you know. My grandfather, as a young man, he taught school in Nova Scotia. He moved out here. He couldn't join up for the Second World War. As a young man, he got a paperclip in the eye. Another student shot a paperclip at him and blinded him in one eye. So he couldn't serve in the military. So he taught school instead. Anyhow, when my dad came back, they got together and started hunting again. Well, my grandfather's Greg was a very, very, very tall man. And they used to have the odd cocktail back then when they went out hunting. And they were out at Nordegg, and I don't know if you guys have traveled the Forestry Trunk Road from Rocky Mountain House to Nordegg, but there is a stretch somewhere along in there where it's roughly about 7 kilometers, all on a slight downhill. Well, if you don't have a four-wheel drive and you only have a positive traction car, well, you know yourself that once you start up a hill, you want to keep going.
Don't stop.
Well, yeah, don't stop. So my grandfather said, Stan, it's a little bit snowy on the road, so I'll jump in the trunk for extra weight. You get going. Well, after seven kilometers of driving up the hill, the snow had curled in around, and Dad said, you know, he got out of the car at the top of the hill kind of thing and came around back, and the trunk was entirely full of snow, and all he could see was my grandfather's two eyes, and he was not very happy.
Too good.
And that's too funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we're just scratching the surface of like all of the incredible stuff that you've done, Ed. And I think, you know, it'd be a pleasure to have you back. Like, I would love to have you back on and do another episode with you. And I mean, man, especially if you end up landing an elk or something like that, we'll be watching for sure. And if that happens, like, oh man, we will celebrate the success with you. And we'd love to talk about it, and even spring bear with you and your son and anything like that, or any other stories that come up. If you're like, oh man, we should talk about this one, let us know. Cause yeah, it would be an honor to have you back anytime.
We'll have a podcast cocktail.
Guys, absolutely, guys, the pleasure is all mine, and at any time, if you would give me the chance to talk, I would love to share as many sports stories as I can with you. And the pictures too. Sometime we'll have to get together, and I'd love to show you pictures. I've got pictures that go back to the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, you know. So
We should all get together and sit down, because I'd love to see like photo albums like that you just can't get online anymore, you know.
Absolutely. And the nice part about it is they're my family. They're They're my brothers, my uncles, my cousins, my grandfather, my father. So I know the stories. I got the stories firsthand, you know, and it's amazing stuff. Amazing stuff.
No. Well, I think on both behalf of Luke and I, we couldn't thank you enough for coming on and sharing everything. And
yeah, thank you so much.
It would be awesome to have you back. And yeah, I mean, same thing. I'm like, man, like you said, we could go on for hours, and I feel like we got to pick up where we left off and do this again sometime for sure and keep going, because it's amazing to hear the things that you've done.
We'll call it the Ed Tetley series.
Yeah. stories from
shed season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shed season. Shed season. That's a good one. I like that. Stories from the shed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People will be totally thrown off with me, the shed hunting episode.
Yeah.
So when are they going to talk about picking up antlers?
Yeah. Gentlemen, the pleasure was all mine. I really appreciate the opportunity to share stories with you. Anytime that that you'd like me to come on the show, by all means, I'll drop anything right away and come join you guys anytime.
No, we appreciate it, Dunzed. And again, thank you so much, and your whole family for all the support, whether it was, you know, picking up magazines or listening to episodes of the podcast and reaching out and following and talking and stuff. You guys are an awesome group of people. That's amazing.
Oh, our pleasure. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, man.
No, thank you, guys.
But yeah, you have a great night there, Ed, and you too, Luke, and we'll talk to you guys here soon.
Goodbye, everybody.
Gentlemen, bye, man. Bye for now, guys. Thanks for reading.
Oh, for sure. See you.